Our guest today on Meet the Press is Eldridge Cleaver, the former head of the Black Panther Party and the author of the bestseller, Soul on Ice. Mr. Cleaver fled this country 7 years ago to live in Cuba, then Algiers, then Paris. He returned voluntarily a few months ago to face charges of attempted murder in a shootout with police. He was recently released from jail in Oakland, California on bail of $100,000. We'll have the first questions now from Ford Rowan of NBC News.
Mr. Cleaver, when you came back to this country, you announced a conversion to American patriotism and ideals. Some of your former revolutionary colleagues said that that must represent some kind of deal with the government, that maybe you made a deal to stay out of jail. Is that true?
Well, the fact that I didn't stay out of jail should explain that very quickly, that it wasn't true. I had some very deep transformations in my own personal life and my outlook on life, which they didn't understand. See?
Well, do you expect to go back to jail?
I wouldn't expect to go back to jail. I still have to face a trial, but I'm confident that I'll be vindicated when I do face that trial.
Mr. Cleaver, I'd like to quote from Soul on Ice. It's a remarkable document. In it, you said, "Of course, I want to get out of prison badly. If I had followed the path laid down for me by the officials, I'd undoubtedly have long since been out of prison, but I'd be less of a man. I'd be weaker and less certain of where I want to go, what I want to do, and how to go about it. Now that you've come back and you face the possibility of going back to prison, do you feel weaker and like less of a man?"
Now, I've never felt stronger and more manly in my life. And the prison system is there to change your behavior, to rehabilitate people. But I don't feel that I'm in need of any rehabilitation. I feel that I have no need for to be in prison.
Well, you didn't always describe the prison system as being there to rehabilitate people. You once described it, you said, "Negro convicts are prisoners of war, the victims of a vicious dog-eat-dog social system." I gather you no longer feel that way.
Well, I do still feel that because of some of the historical circumstances of black people I've had to face in this country, the prison system functions as a repressive machine. I mean, because of my changes in attitude, this doesn't mean that everything that I've said in the past is not true. I'm talking about a different and new approach to change, and not to just say everything that was ever done in the past was wrong.
Thank you, Mr. Cleveland. In addition to Ford Rowan, our reporters today are Paul Delaney of the New York Times and Robert Novak of the Chicago Sun-Times. Mr. Delaney?
Mr. Cleaver, a minute ago you said that no deal had been made regarding your return to this country. Nevertheless, a lot of blacks believe that a deal had been made. And if not, they're puzzled by your return and your new posture. How do you explain it?
Well, I think a lot of people are not used to seeing someone voluntarily surrender, knowing that they will go immediately into jail. In most cases, you see people, as I did, running away from jail. I had a change in my attitude towards how change should be approached in this country. This came particularly because the country began to react to some of the problems that were posed, like the war, for instance, terminating in Indochina, the Senate and the courts and so forth beginning to deal with the problem posed by the Watergate affair, and progress being made by black people in participating in the political life of this country. All of this, I think, indicates that other people should be more open and conciliatory, willing to bend a little bit in order to facilitate things.
In your book, Soul on Ice, Mr. Cleaver, you mentioned that you believe that the white backlash was an illusion. Do you still think that?
Well, it has some illusory aspects. It has also some very concrete aspects. At the time that I wrote that, this is several years ago when the term white backlash was quite topical. It had to do with reactions to the civil rights demonstrations and so forth, and I think it was very real at that time.
And it's been reduced now, you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that the problems that were posed at that time have been more or less resolved. We've gone forward from that period so that we have other problems now and not the problems that were posed at that time.
Mr. Novak?
Mr. Cleaver, in a interview you had with Rolling Stone magazine, while under your new posture you praised the U.S. military, you also said some things that I'd like to ask you about. You proposed a major purge of the officers, a rewriting of the manuals. You called for moving on the military because without that support, brother, there ain't going to be no revolution. Just what do you have in mind for the use of the U.S. military to conduct some kind of revolution?
Well, I don't have any program in mind for the use of the American military to conduct a revolution. What I was talking about that in that interview was the American military is constitutionally bound to carry out the orders and the direction of the civilian government. A lot of people during the war in Vietnam tended to blame the Pentagon or the military for the war itself, when in fact they were carrying out the orders of the civilian government. Some of the excesses that were coming out of the Pentagon itself, this is what I based my call for the removal of the officers responsible for that. And my observations around the world that people inside of the military establishments of various countries are also human as the other people in the societies, and they have the best interests of those societies at heart. And to just take a position that the military people are not interested in progress and change, I think, is a big mistake.
Well, what is this revolution, Mr. Cleaver, that you say the U.S. military is indispensable for? I don't quite understand what role that they would play in it.
Well, I think that anybody with any intelligence can see that our country has posed some very fundamental problems and need for change. And to approach that change with the assumption that the American military would be opposed to it is what I'm saying is a mistake. I think that the people in the military would also be interested in helping to bring about some change in this country that would help to bring a better life to the broad sections of the people that are not now participating in the good life that a lot of people do have in this country.
I want to ask you about another aspect of your new posture, Mr. Cleaver, and that is you've been very critical of the large communist superpowers, the Soviet Union and mainland China. You said the greatest shock was when former President Nixon went over to China and shook hands with the Chinese. Is that your only criticism of the Chinese government, that they tried to make some kind of arrangement with the United States?
And this is not the basis of my total criticism of the Chinese government. My major criticism with all communist governments has to do with their lack of any machinery through which the people are able to bring their will to bear on the decision-making process. That is, they have dictatorial, totalitarian regimes which by their very nature are oppressive. And I've learned this by visiting those countries and meeting the people.
Mr. Cleaver, in connection with the charges you face in California, there was a shootout in 1968 involving, as I understand it, three carloads of Black Panthers and Oakland police. One Panther was killed. You wound up under charges of attempted murder and assault with a deadly weapon, six counts altogether. You have said you think you will win that case. What makes you think so, especially considering that some of the Panthers in that incident did serve time?
Well, as you know, as I told you, as my attorney told you before this program, the judge who is presiding over my process has imposed a very stringent gag order. I'm not allowed to discuss this, but the people who went to trial, who were my co-defendants, they went to trial at a time when people were not willing to question the behavior and the motivation of police agencies. They went to trial prior to the exposés of the Watergate situation. They went to trial prior to the expose of the COINTELPRO activities, and I feel this is a very disadvantageous situation in which they went to trial, and I'm coming to trial in a very different climate, and I feel that I will be able to have a fair day in court, and I think that I will be vindicated.
I think it's fair to say, Mr. Cleaver, that you used to be a very violent man. You talked about raping white women. You felt there was some justification for that. You have been charged with these charges in California, which have not yet been proven. You haven't gone to trial yet. At one time, you showed up at the California legislature with two dozen Panthers with guns. In view of this background, wouldn't some people believe that perhaps your present posture of looking on America as having more virtues than you used to see, your present talk of working within the system might be a big con game to set up public opinion to help you in your trial?
Well, I'm sure that there are a lot of cynical people who immediately seek to find an interpretation of that sort when they see someone in the position that I'm in. But I was living in France. I could have continued to live in France, but I wanted to come back and to straighten out my life and to clear myself before the courts and to raise my family in the United States. And those who are looking for some hidden motivation or some secret deal or reason, they're welcome to look. You know, I'm willing to stand examination.
I gather from some of the things you've said since you came back that one of the factors in your return was that you were disillusioned by the quality of democracy you found in certain countries abroad where you had expected to find perhaps more democracy than existed here.
Well, that question sort of poses the assumption that I left here in the first place because I thought the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. That's not at all why I left. I left here because the California Adult Authority was trying to imprison me illegally. And I've been vindicated on that point because that whole situation has been resolved by a writ of habeas corpus, and the Adult Authority itself has dismissed their charges against me. And that is why I left this country. But in my travels and observations around the world, I took note of the fact that there are a lot of shortcomings in the form of governments that I've seen. And this caused me to have a different perspective on the situation here.
Mr. Rowland?
Mr. Cleaver, I'd like to probe your new feelings about America by asking you about something that you referred to just a few minutes ago, COINTELPRO. That was the FBI's program to disrupt groups like the Black Panthers. Indeed, they did that. One FBI report says that shootings, beatings, and a high degree of unrest continues to prevail in a ghetto in Southern California, and a substantial amount of the unrest is directly attributable to the FBI's program. The Senate Intelligence Committee said the FBI used lawless tactics, violent, to create and foment violence and unrest. Is that what you like about America? I'd like to get your feelings on this, since obviously you were, you know, right in there in the Black Panthers at one time.
It's not that that I like about America. What I do like about America is the fact that the Senate was willing to probe that area and to air that in public and to come up with that information and to disseminate that information to the American people. Because in a similar situation in other countries, it would never meet the light of day. And I think these are points that are very important when you see that people in other countries, including the Soviet Union, really throughout the world, are struggling, really struggling to have the kind of democratic institutions that we have here where we can take care of that kind of business in public and in the open without fear that the world is going to come to an end. I think this is extremely important when you see what is happening in the rest of the world.
Mr. Cleaver, during the time you were overseas, the American National Security Agency had your name on a watch list and spied on your movements overseas. I'm just trying to probe your feelings about a government that you've come back and embraced when the record shows that you have reason or could have reason to dislike some of its tactics.
Well, I do dislike the illegal activities carried out by various law enforcement agencies or security agencies. But I'm also aware that other countries do the same thing. And really, when you compare our prison systems or our police agencies or the FBI, the CIA, I think they stack up very favorably when you compare them to some of the others that I've checked it out myself.
One quick follow-up. Should the NSA have spied on you? You were a fugitive. Should the FBI have watched the Black Panthers?
Well, I think that when you look back historically, these agencies received a lot of pressure from the government to do this sort of thing, and they received pressure from the director, J. Edgar Hoover, to do this sort of thing. The illegal activities that they carried out, I think, are reprehensible and should not have been carried out.
But should they have monitored you? You were a fugitive. Should they have watched you?
The activities that were illegal, I think, should not have been done. The things that were legal, I think they should have been done. I would not have been a fugitive in the first place had it not been for some of the excesses that were carried out by various agencies.
Mr. Delane?
Mr. Cleaver, in your travels and residency in particularly Algeria and Cuba, you did express some disillusionment in those governments. Does that disillusionment spread to other third world countries generally? What's your feeling regarding third world countries now?
Well, I did express disillusionment with the situation that exists in Cuba and also in Algeria. I paid very close attention, particularly to the forms of government that exist in those countries and how they treated the people. And my conclusion is that it leaves a lot to be desired, because what they do is they model their regime on the dictatorial forms. They have military dictatorships, or they have one-party states that tend to be like totalitarian and dictatorial. And when you live in that situation, you can't really appreciate it.
What's the difference, though? You used to describe the U.S. as dictatorial and totalitarian. What's the difference in the form of dictatorship you found there as opposed to the kind you charge existed here in the 1960s?
I think there's a great difference. In the first place, I think the United States cannot be accurately described as a dictatorship. If I said that in the past, I think I would be guilty of excessive use of language.
What about an oppressor, an oppressive nation, as you said
it was? Well, insofar as black people are concerned, the United States historically has had us in slavery. And there have been like an evolution from slavery up to the present moment. From the abolition of slavery up until today, I don't think anyone would say that, you know, like all oppression ended with the Emancipation Proclamation and from then on we were free. There's been a slow evolution with a wider and wider range of freedom that we've gained through our struggles.
Mr. Novak?
Mr. Cleaver, Gloucester Current of the NAACP has called you a creature of the media and said that you have contributed absolutely nothing, those were his words, to the black movement. Now, these improvements in the condition of American black people that you've noted since your return, do you feel that you personally or the Black Panther Party in general can take any credit for that improvement in the lot of the black people?
Well, it's kind of a complicated question you asked. In the first place, we are here in a media situation, and this would be like an extension of creation, if you want to call it that. But Mr. Current's statement, I've read that before, is for other people to judge whether or not the Black Panther Party contributed anything to the progress of black people in this country or whether I contributed. Personally, I feel that we played a particular role at a particular time in history, and I'm quite satisfied that there was some good in what we did and there was some bad.
What was the bad, Mr. Cleaver?
Well, I think that we were a little naive in our approach. You know, I think that we were excessive in some of our language. I think we scared a lot of people, not so much by our practice, our activities, but by the way that we described certain situations. And if I had it to do all over again, with hindsight, I'd do it differently.
I'd just like to follow up on one question, Mr. Delaney's, about the Third World. You've been quoted as saying that you'll find black people have more freedom in South Africa or in Rhodesia than they do in Uganda. Do you have some misgivings about a black majority government in Rhodesia under the present black leadership there?
I don't have any misgivings about a majority government anywhere in the world. What I do have misgivings about is the way that it's formulated. To say that you'd have black majority rule assumes that the white people in Rhodesia would always vote wrongly on the issues and that the black people would always vote rightly. I don't think this can be assumed.
Mr. Cleaver, let me ask you what might be in the future for you under two different conditions. First, if you lose your case and are sentenced to what could be a very long jail term, and then secondly, if you win your case and go free.
See, one thing that happened to me during the period that I was abroad, and really was the underlying reason why I was able to find the courage and the strength to return and go to prison, is that I experienced religious conversion. I've become a Christian. And anything that I do in the future has to take that into consideration. And I'm a person with the heart full of goodwill. I'm interested in whatever good contribution that I can make. If it's the will of the Lord that I go to prison, that I lose my case, then I will go to prison, and whatever happens there, it will happen there. And if I am acquitted, as I feel that I will be, as I feel that would be just, then I will do whatever work the Lord brings to me. So it's as simple as that.
Is that likely to be writing or lecturing?
Well, I think that as long as I'm able, I will write and I will lecture.
What about politics?
I like to criticize politicians, you know. I like to observe the political process, and I think that realistically I can make a better contribution. I have no political aspirations of my own.
We have 1 minute, Mr. Rowan.
Mr. Cleaver, it's often very hard to understand people who have undergone conversions. You said a little bit ago, if you had to do it over again, you'd do it differently. Well, once you said, a dead pig is the best pig of all, referring to policemen. We encourage people to kill them. Is that the kind of thing you would not do if you had to do it again? How much of Soul on Ice would you just throw away?
Well, I wouldn't throw Soul on Ice away at all. I'd leave it on the shelf for people to read, because I think it belongs in a certain time frame and period of history. But certainly I don't think that I would make that statement. I don't really remember making that statement. But it's vintage Panther of the 60s, so that I think this would be something I would avoid. Except the reprehensible behavior of the police and so forth during that period cannot be condoned, and you cannot expect people to react calmly when they're subjected to those kind of insidious activities, so that we were responding to what was going on at that time.
Our time is up. Thank you, Mr. Cleaver, for being with us today on Meet the Press. I'll tell you about next week's guest in just a minute after this message. To make air travel as dependable as you want it, 197 airlines depend on Pratt & Whitney aircraft engines from United Technologies. In peak periods, nearly 1,500 of their aircraft throughout the world make some 20,000 takeoffs in a single day. To show what's wrong with your car and what's needed to fix it, car dealers, garages, and gas stations use our AutoSense Engine Analyzer. It's an electronic computer system that gives you a printout showing not only what's wrong, but whether the repairs fix the problem. To help you cook in minutes, Amana uses our computerized controls on its Touchmatic Radar Range microwave oven. It thaws frozen food, holds it till the right moment, cooks it precisely, and with a quiet beep, tells you it's ready to enjoy. We're the technologies of Pratt & Whitney Aircraft, Hamilton Standard, and Essex, three units of United Technologies.
High technology is our basic strength. We make it work for you in many ways.
For a printed copy of today's interview, send 25 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C., 20013.
Next Sunday on Meet the Press, our guest will be Leonard Woodcock, President of the United Automobile Workers. Now, this is Bill Monroe saying goodbye for Eldridge Cleaver and Meet the Press.
Today's edition of Meet the Press was brought to you by United Technologies Corporation, Hartford, Connecticut.
Tomorrow on the Today program, Tom Brokaw will interview Jimmy Carter, the Democratic presidential candidate, live at his home in Plains, Georgia. Also appearing will be Utah's Congressman Alan Howe and his wife, and from Washington, U.S. Chief of Protocol Shirley Temple Black. That's tomorrow on Today. This is Maury Higdon speaking.